heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Well, the first image that I seen of that interview with President Donald Trump and ABC's George Stephanopoulos there was in the car, in the, what they call the beast there, where Trump is sort of positioned on one side. It's got sort of one cheek of his ass on the seat and the other cheek up in the ear. He's kind of positioned off to the side, kind of cocked to the side, if you will. And George is right in the middle there. Of course, there's a big height difference between George and Donald, to keep in mind. But George is right in the middle. And Trump is sort of like, you know, positioned like you see, you know, like you would at the edge of a seat somewhere, kind of in a very odd position for anybody, let alone the president of the United States. And I thought, well, that is an awful odd picture, an awful odd position. You know, what's the difference of height of these guys? Well, George is 5'5". He's pretty short, I think, for a guy, maybe a little shorter than average. And Trump, probably a little taller than average. He's 6'3". And so there's obviously a difference there, and there's a difference in a lot of things with these two. Certainly their politics are different, their ideology, their philosophies are different. But why in the world would a president grant any network 30 hours of access? I wonder. I was wondering that exactly, why he would grant 30 hours to ABC, to George Stephanopoulos? I mean, come on, you got to be kidding me. Like 30 hours to him? I mean, did they become blood brothers or something in the past few months and I missed that particular show? Or, you know, that's a lot of time for anybody. But you got to remember, this is, it's an interesting strategy, I guess, if you think about it. George has not been favorable to the president, clearly. ABC has not been favorable to the president. Of course, NBC has, and CBS and CNN and MS, and I can, you know, I just go right down the list. It's easy to tell you who's been favorable to the president. Probably just about Fox News is about all you can put on the other side. And it's obvious what's happened here because, you know, you see Chris Wallace. He has this interview with Mike Pompeo here this past week as well, and that's interesting as well. There's a lot of entertainment going on here. I've talked to you before about political entertainment. And what I have affectionately start to call here the world of polytainment. You know, I do any of us remember a time when we were bored with politics, maybe? Where we were totally bored out of our minds, and not no more today, people. I mean, it certainly is entertaining at the highest level for sure. Never seen quite anything like this exactly. But I'm wondering, as you see a lot of these recent stories, I've been thinking about, what is Trump up to? You know, just launching his 2020 campaign now. You see that happening the other day. And you see he's off and running to the races. You've got, you know, last count, I think it was like 942 running against him on the left. I'm not sure how they're going to fit them all into the arena for a debate, but that's the last count I recall. It's getting very entertaining. Everybody's coming out of the woodwork. They want a piece of Trump. And, of course, most of them know they don't have a shot. They'll never win. But, you see, it might boost their career. It might give them a book. It might give them a speaking tour. It might give them some fame, a few minutes of fame maybe. Doesn't hurt the career. What about you and I? Maybe we should run for president, huh? I don't know, what party would we pick, do you think, huh? The Fool's Party? So this polytainment, I think it's become quite interesting in the world of polytainment and thinking about Trump in recent days and what is his overarching strategy. He's a hard one sometimes to figure out for most people. And the words came to my mind, self-inflicted wounds. Is the president on a crusade now for self-inflicted wounds? I mean, that would be, I think, the answer back to why you would give 30 hours to a George Stephanopoulos. I mean, why else would you give 30 hours to him, right? It's got to be self-inflicted wounds, or the president's bored, potentially. Or maybe he thinks you're bored, and you need some more entertaining. So he's going to shake it up a little bit. It's one thing the president loves to do. He loves to turn things on its side. Maybe that's why he had half of his ass on the seat and half up in the air in the car there. I don't know. But he loves to flip things over, loves to turn it all upside down backwards. He enjoys that. And you know what else? His followers really enjoy it. Trump world loves that. They think he's just really highly entertaining. He's really taken this whole new world of politicainment, and he's driving the left crazy. They have no idea what to make of this guy. And so this 30 hours he spends with George, at one point, Trump became so frustrated with George that and you've seen this, I'm sure, because it was reported everywhere. The one thing the media does is they look for anything they can get at all, any little item, and they push it back out there so they can show you what a fool Trump is, you know, or how entertaining he is or whatever. But you've seen the soundbite where he called George a little wise guy, that he's acting like a little wise guy, which he referenced that you tend to always do that, don't you, George? Well, yeah, I mean, Trump knew he was a wise guy before he invited him in for 30 hours, but he still invited him in for 30 hours. I mean, George Stephanopoulos has a history. He has a background. He has an ideology. He worked in the Clinton administration. He has a whole background of things. So there must be something up with Donald as to why he'd want to spend 30 hours with George. But he calls him a little wise guy. The media has fun with that and puts that out there, amongst other things. And so he's in the backseat of the car again. It gets really interesting, and they have this exchange back and forth. And so Trump brought up the phony witch hunt again. And Mueller comes out. There's no collusion, he says. But as George points out, that's not what Mueller said. And let me just read you a little bit of this interchange. It's very revealing. So George says, I don't think that's what he found, but we don't have time for that now. We'll talk about it later. So George cuts the president off. We don't have time for that now. That's interesting to me. Trump says, well, that is what he found. Excuse me. You know how Trump does that when he gets annoyed with the reporter. Excuse me. He found no collusion, idiot. He didn't say idiot, of course, but that was the reference of the tone. He found no collusion. Excuse me, that means you're an idiot, and you don't have to say idiot, and you know, but it's a way to do it. You say, excuse me? I do that all the time to people. It's fun. You should try it. And he says, and they didn't find anything having to do with obstruction because they made the ruling based on his findings, and they said no obstruction. And of course, George says, he didn't examine collusion. He laid out evidence of obstruction. Now, we know what George wants. We know what he believes. He's not a fan of Trump, but still Trump gave him 30 hours, which is amazing to me. And Trump then says, oh, you trying to say now there was collusion, huh, George? Even though he said there was no collusion, George says, he didn't say there was no collusion. Trump says, he said no collusion. George says, he said he didn't look at collusion. Trump says, George, the report said no collusion. George says, did you read the report? Trump says, yes, I did. You should read it too, George. That's a great one-liner. You should read it too, George. Well, that's entertaining. Now he's calling the ABC, the top correspondent there, the big news guy, 5'5", but he's big, big in the news world. He said, you should read it too, George. It's highly entertaining, the Mueller report, you know? Yeah, the report you all waited and you're salviated on and drooled over and you know, for all those, over 2 years? And you got nothing on me, ha, 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 you know? And then let's fast forward just a little bit after that to the Mike Pompeo interview with Chris Wallace. And the headline on this one I seen in the Washington Examiner was really cool. It says, a visibly irritated Mike Pompeo calls Chris Wallace's question ridiculous. And I thought, okay, well, here we go. Let's see what this is. And, of course, the Secretary of State comes out. He was growing annoyed with, very annoyed with Chris Wallace. Of course, anybody who sits down with Chris Wallace for any amount of time would be annoyed because Chris Wallace annoys everybody. The way he questions, the way he does his news. I mean, if you've been following the career with Chris, let's just say he's no Mike Wallace. He annoys you. It's what he does. He gets under your skin. It's like one of those little ticks, you know? And that's what Chris Wallace does. He's very effective at it. If you like that kind of thing. Again, it's very entertaining. Very entertaining. And so Wallace asks, he says, is accepting opposition research from a foreign government right or wrong? Now, Chris is going to take the high road. He's going to be the big reporter on campus. To which Pompeo replied, Chris, you know, you asked me not to call any of your questions today ridiculous. He says, you know, you came really close there. So Pompeo's calling Chris Wallace out. He's asking a ridiculous question, right? President Trump has made it very clear, Pompeo says. He clarified his remarks later. He made it very clear, even in the first comments, he said, I'd do both. He said he'd call the FBI. Well, of course, Wallace is writing all this down. He's noting this. That he says, no. He said he would maybe contact the FBI. He said, maybe. He emphasizes Wallace, you know. So then Pompeo conceded that Trump said that in a subsequent interview following the initial one on Wednesday with ABC that marked the controversy. So if you follow this along now, then the Trump administration comes out and they have to clarify the remarks of what Trump said or didn't say, which has been pretty standard for the administration. He says, and then I love this. He said, I have nothing further to add, Pompeo says, as Mike kept pushing, you know, on him. He said, I came on to talk about foreign policy, and I think the third time you've asked me about a Washington piece of silliness that chased down a story that is inconsistent with what I have seen President Trump do every single day. And then to which Chris Wallace responded, I think I only asked you twice. Now, that's typically what Chris Wallace does because he's like a tick. He just gets under your skin and he aggravates the hell out of you. He said, I think I only asked you twice, you see. So that's, again, just more entertainment. I love this, though. It's really great stuff. Back and forth, back and forth. And so Pompeo is a straight shooter. He doesn't like the political entertainment kind of stuff. He's a straight sort of guy. But he'll knock you on your ass if you need it or deserve it. But he doesn't play the same political entertainment world that Donald Trump lives in. Trump loves all of this stuff. He thinks it's terrific. Pompeo, not so much. So, and of course, Wallace is just a product of the whole, the industry, the syndrome that's out there, the TDS, you know, TDS, right? Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah, Wallace is part of that. Yeah, so that's the world of political entertainment. So I've been thinking about these self-inflicted wounds. I've been thinking, what is the president up to? Why is he doing this? I mean, you know, things are going along pretty well, I think, for the most part. He got through the Mueller thing. The economy is still doing pretty well. People seem to be happy. Now, another piece to this pie is the polls. You're starting to see all the polls, and everybody and his brother is beating President Trump. That's the other thing. Even the local butcher and the mosquito control cat are beating President Trump. I mean, if you look at every poll that comes out, because, you know, polls are so honorable and they're so accurate, and we just really love the polls here. It's a great mechanism to really understand who's going to be elected. Follow the polls. Every media person knows they're a joke. Every television radio person knows they're a joke. Everybody knows they're worthless, but they continue to use the polls. And of course, the left, they love the polls because now they're trying to convince everybody that President Trump is really behind and that everybody is going to beat him. Even O'Rourke and Mayor Pete Buttigieg, we just love that name, Pete Buttigieg, huh? And the Beto, everybody, I get some really interesting people over there, I'll tell you. And they're all just, you know, they're all loving it as well. I mean, so they're all going to beat Trump. Trump doesn't have a chance if you follow the polls right now. Because, you know, again, polls are very honorable. And people are always honest with the pollsters. I mean, they are. Right? I mean, the polls have had such a great record. That's how Trump got into office, because the polls were so accurate, right? Yeah, absolutely. So we'll all follow the polls now. So this is all part of the political entertainment game, people, because this is how they entertain the populace. The problem is most of the populace only catch seconds of this thing. They don't live this thing like you and I, and I say you because probably most of our audience is pretty engaged in this stuff. Most of you are very engaged. You know what's going on. You're on the upper end of the informed audience, clearly. That's why you're listening. That's why you're engaged. the people who are not listening or not engaged don't really care. They don't give a rat's ass, and they're back to the political attainment, and they only see the headlines, or they see what, you know, the CNNs are spewing out there and what they can grab onto, or that the polls show that Trump is losing, and so I better vote for a winner, because there's a whole psychology behind that, and then you can vote for a winner, and then you get more votes on the left. It's another strategy. It's a media strategy of how to win an election and see if you can fool most of the people most of the time. Because if you can fool most of the people most of the time, then you have a chance to raise those percentage points. You see, that's how that works with pollsters. And when you're all in the camp and you want to build a socialist democracy, you want to kill the republic, that's the way to do it. You see? So you just run all those polls out there and you keep spewing lies and what have you. But then I'm really conflicted with the self-inflicted wounds, why Trump does what he does. But they say, wasn't there a book wrote, remember his two cats wrote the book, Let Trump Be Trump or something, right? That's what this is, Let Trump Be Trump. Let Trump Be Trump. That should be a book, right? Let Trump Be Trump. And just let him be who he is. That's what he is. He's an entertainer. He was, remember, he did the whole entertainment thing. He did the pageants. He did the whole Celebrity Apprentice. He's an entertainer. He's a showstopper. He walks out on the stage and he'll get your attention real quick. I understand that. I love speaking to large crowds and doing that. I get it. I totally understand the entertaining part. It is very entertaining, this business is. So I don't know. Maybe Trump is bored. Maybe he's looking to shake it up a little bit. Maybe he's maybe he thinks you're bored. Maybe he thinks you need to be entertained a little bit further. I don't know. But again, there is a whole nation at stake here. There is a whole republic hanging in the balance potentially. So it's an interesting thing though to look at this psychologically on these self-inflicted wounds in the world of polytainment. And I thought it's a place we should start today and have a conversation, just you and I. I invited a few friends into chat as well about these self-inflicted wounds. Let's talk a minute.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. Sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, I'm sure you're having a lot of fun out there. And I know Trump supporters are. And I got to tell you what, if it's any idea of the crowds out there that are coming to all these events, you'll get a sense that the polls might have their head somewhere. And it ain't in the sky, that's for sure. You can do your imagination where they have it. But I tell you what, Trump certainly pulls the crowds in, people. But this whole thing about the self-inflicted wounds, let's bring some people on here, some friends of the network here, and talk a little bit about the self-inflicted wounds. First, I'd like you to welcome on Brooke Says. You know, Brooke is a columnist on the platform. She's an activist, a patriot, strategic communications analyst, and a cultural impact specialist. So she likes to watch these societal media-driven events, and she reports on them in a unique way. She's very conservative-minded, so she'll put you in your place quickly if you step on her toes, for sure. All right, Brooke, so are you having fun yet? Are you thoroughly entertained, by the way? I want to ask you, are you having fun?
Yeah, I love Trump. It's a show, I tell you. If nothing else, it's a big show. It's great.
All right, so it's great. And that's what a lot of his, you know, that's an honest reaction. That's what a lot of his rabid supporters would think. Here's the thing I want people to know right away about Brooke. Brooke was at one point, you ain't going to believe this, people. At one point, she was a never-Trumper. So she was actually not in support of the president. Was that true, Brooke? Is that true?
Well, yes, because I wasn't sure he was conservative enough.
Exactly. No, it's perfect. Yeah. That's perfect. That's exactly the truth. I mean, you didn't think he was conservative. And boy, were you fooled. Were you fooled?
Oh, he's exceeded my expectations with so many things. You know, he's from Manhattan, so, you know.
Yeah. He'll tell you what bus stop to get off, Brooke, or what exit to take off the highway, for sure.
I love it.
I mean, he is probably, and we can argue this point, and I'm happy to do that on this program or any program, but he's probably, arguably, not in my world, but he's probably the most conservative president we've seen in our lifetimes. I mean, he has surpassed conservatism even in Ronald Reagan days. Would you agree with that statement, Brooke?
That's the crazy thing. I mean, you would think Bill Kristol would be asking to go over and hang out with him every night, but these never Trumpers, supposedly conservatives, are now advocating donating to, like, the Kochs donating to Democrats and having Democrats run against him. It's insane.
Yeah. Now there's a whole bunch of them. You're right. The Kristols of the world, and there's a bunch of them. So
they want more war, though. See, that's the thing. The neocon right just wants more war. So.
Yeah. Well, they are. There's a lot of extremists out there. Talk to me about the self-inflicted wounds, Brooke. What do you think about this? Serious question now. You see this 30 hours to Stephanopoulos here. Would you have granted 30 hours to this dude, number one? Do you think the president should have? And what about these self-inflicted wounds? Tell me.
Operating under conventional wisdom and conventional thinking, no, I wouldn't, because there's no good to be found. And even Rush Limbaugh talked about this. Like, why on earth would you grant it? Going with Stephanopoulos is like going with the Clinton campaign, the DNC, you know, it's a no-brainer. However, here's the thing. Trump does not operate under the ROE, the rules of engagement, of conventional wisdom. I have to believe that there is a reason he did that. I don't know what it is, and there are lots of things that he does I don't know the exact reason for. And I had two ways of, my initial thought was like, oh my God, especially when Stephanopoulos said the thing about he asked him about the dirt, right? And I know you're going to talk about it with Pompeo, about the dirt and what he said, and then all of the people on the media and Hollywood and everywhere, all of the people on the left went completely crazy, including the Never Trumpers, over what he said about getting information from foreign government. But here's the thing. My thought is this. It has to be only one of two things. Either he's a moron and he shouldn't have done it, and it's going to be, like you said, a self-inflicted wound, or it is an unbelievable stealth attack setup whereby he set up everybody in the media, Hollywood, entertainment, all of these people that either run the media or are influencers on the left, to denounce everything that he knows is about to come out that Hillary Clinton and Obama did.
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
All the information.
Okay. I like your setup there. Let's go to Jules Jones and bring her in the conversation here. Jules is a political activist. She's an entrepreneur, a small business owner, social media influencer. Jules, all right. So back to what Brooke was just saying. Is he a moron, or was this just a beautifully placed event here, the 30 hours given to Georgie boy there?
I think he is absolutely brilliant. We are sitting here talking about him right now, and so is everybody else. Like he said before, bad press is good press. We'll be talking about this for quite some time. So this is how he won the first time around. He got a ton of media attention. What worries me coming into the next election is that they are going to fawn over whoever it is he's going to be running against.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to have to fight for this spotlight.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, use it. Go with it.
Yeah,
I think it works. It works on him. I mean, he has already now labeled Stephanopoulos as a little wise guy. Mm-hmm. Guess what? We're going to be talking about, you know, we've discredited him now.
Yeah.
So he's joined the ranks of the others. So great move, President Trump. I'm for you all the way.
The video that was extracted from the program, ladies, was indeed the video that Brooke just referenced a moment ago here. It's when Trump indicated he had, like, he would be willing, supposedly, this was the claim, that he was willing to accept dirt on his Democratic opponents from a foreign entity. And of course, ladies, we know in Washington, nobody would ever do that. I mean, you both know that. And so nobody would do that. Clearly, we all know know that. You all know that out there as well. And so it goes on, and he has this exchange, by the way, with George Stephanopoulos about the FBI director, Christopher Wray. Stephanopoulos puts it out there and says, well, your FBI director says X. And Trump, that, you know, that this is wrong, that you shouldn't be doing this kind of thing. You can't be taking this opposition research. You need to turn it over. And so then Trump says, well, the FBI director is wrong. He says to Stephanopoulos now, he said, it's not interference, it's information. So what do you think, Jules, about that, with the exchange he has? And, you know, the other thing, he doesn't back down when he throws, like, his FBI director. I mean, that's a pretty striking quote. The FBI director is wrong. That's a heavy coming from the president, huh?
Well, I think that Trump is, again, being Trump. I mean, you know, he's putting himself as a regular person in a conversation. And if somebody came and whispered in my ear about something that I'm not supposed to know about, would I listen to it? Yes. If I thought that there was a problem with it and I needed to report it, yes. He said he would do both things. So I don't see a big problem with that, no.
You don't. All right. Well, listen, let me put this out there as I bring on now Dennis Santiago here. And Dennis is, as you know, an American strategist. He's a philosopher patriot here. He's a columnist and certainly a commentator here at America Out Loud. And everything we're talking about now, is this all part of the president's charm? That he says what he wants to say when he wishes to say it. Things like when he says to about his FBI director, even that, he says, well, the FBI director is wrong. You don't normally see a president say that about his director. I mean, it's a guy he handpicked for that spot. Is this all part of his charm?
It's not only part of his charm. It's part of his personality. Look at it this way. You're talking about a situation here where the president is beginning the next phase of the political campaign. It's time to get reelected. He needs to garner attention from the entirety of the media that for the last 2 years has pretty much tried to ignore him or talk about him as if he was a caricature. He needs to change that. And the bottom line is, how do you change that? Well, you take advantage of your access control over to your office. And you start granting interviews to yourself and your senior staff so that you begin to appear and start to tell your story in those venues that had previously pretty much just tried to interpret you from afar. So that's, I think, using the system on his part. And, you know, even polls, right? You know, what are polls really? If you're doing polls in this world, you're trying to evaluate where are you strong, where are you weak, and what do you need to work on. You don't actually believe the results of polls this early in the game because you're gaming them to see what do you need to do to change your message and adjust it. That's what they're supposed to be for. And remember, you know, if polls were right, we'd be talking about President Clinton.
What you say there now is interesting to me, and it brings back to what when Brooke earlier had said, well, you know, it may be a brilliant move. I just don't know what it is, but it probably could be, or he's a moron or whatever, because you gave 30 hours to this guy. You went into the lion's den. Now, you just pointed out something very interesting that, okay, so let's think about this, people. So is that a way that he gets into the lion's den, the critics, the all that negative commentary out there, Dennis, that we're talking about here with the media? So you're saying that's a way he gets in there and he controls some of the narrative or controls some of the conversation, or they're at least quoting him to some degree. You think that's part of the overarching strategy here then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, like, well, what's been one of the criticisms of President Trump for the last couple of years? Mm-hmm. He's clearly dominated the news media using social media as a way to get in there and force them to go do things, right? Now you get in the campaign season, you got to get them to do things for you in a conventional manner. And mm-hmm. So what is he doing? He's shifting gears. This guy is not a dummy when it comes to political maneuvering. Right. And he's not a dummy when it comes to manipulating the media. I mean, he worked in the media. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what you should be doing at this point in time as your campaign gets started.
Interesting. And that's kind of what Jules was saying as well, that this is very strategic in nature, and what he's doing is probably makes some sense, and it is very entertaining, and people are really enthralled with it all. I was curious to see if we could get an answer for that big question. I think you actually gave it to me, that that's his answer to get in there and control some of that narrative, even though some of it is pretty out there stuff, and some of the things he puts out there with George Stephanopoulos at ABC. I've seen an interesting report on Vox, V-O-X, which now, and if you don't follow Vox or know what that is, friends, that's a far left-leaning publication. Vox, and then Fox is more right-leaning, so you get Vox, and then you get Fox. That's a Dr. Seuss book, Vox and Fox, right? Vox and Fox. I want to talk to you about both of those here. So Vox says that no one on Fox questions Trump. That's what Vox says about Fox. You get it? Okay. And so I'm wondering, so I started thinking, are they overcompensating due to the media bias? So I'm wondering, my question to you, and I want to go to Jules, back to you a moment here about this, because, let's just go around here on this, because Fox, obviously, they pander to President Trump and his agenda very clearly. And I mean, I don't know anybody wants to disagree with that, but they obviously do. And let me read you this little excerpt here that is in Vox. And they say this: after a damaging video excerpt of the Stephanopoulos interview has been released, but before the whole thing aired, Trump called in to his favorite television show, Fox and Friends, for another lengthy interview. But the host refused to challenge Trump in any meaningful way, and the interview produced very little news. This is par for the course for Trump, who often only makes himself available to questioning from interviewers who range from friendly to fawning. Now, Jules, we know the president has a very large ego. We know the president loves people who says great things about him. We also know the president will knock you on your ass if you say something disparaging about him. I mean, he will slice and dice you like a bologna at a local butcher. I mean, he'll cut you down quick, man. And there's no question about that. And so with this information with Vox and then the Fox business, do you agree with that statement with Fox that they seem to be, and my question is, are they overcompensating because a lot of the other media have gone off the rails?
Well, let's look at it for what it is. Look at Fox's ratings compared to the other networks. I mean, they're way higher than anybody else. This is what we want to see. This is what we want to hear. We've been pulling for Trump, who's been the underdog forever. And I don't know about you, but when I watched that interview, mm-hmm. I was agitated that no one brought up the Russian dossier and the fact that that has cost Americans millions of dollars, 2.5 years of a presidency, and it ends up not even being real. Found myself so angry that the focus was on what if Trump does this or what if Trump does that. These what ifs don't matter.
But Jules, you didn't expect George Stephanopoulos from ABC News to bring that up, did you?
No, I didn't. But
did you think Donald was going to bring it up, President Trump?
No. But what happened was, it happened anyway to the viewer. It happened to me just sitting there. I drew my own conclusion. Why are we not talking about what's in front of us here? Why are we talking about hypotheticals? Why aren't we talking about things that we already know are going on? So that's how I saw it.
You know, I wonder if we will ever go back to traditional politics. I wonder. And let me read you this tweet that was just put out here just a few days back here from President Trump here. And Brooke, let's talk about this tweet here. And this is President Trump now. He says this: a poll should be done on which is the more dishonest and deceitful newspaper, the failing New York Times or the Amazon lobbyist Washington Post. Now, you just have to love President Trump the way he put it. He now, in this one tweet, he knocked two big adversaries, the failing New York Times or the Amazon lobbyist Washington Post. And then he goes on to say, the president, they are both a disgrace to our country, the enemy of the people. But I just can't seem to figure out which is worse, he says, the president says. He says, the good, ... And then the next tweet, Brooke, he says, news. And again, this is the president, strategic as hell, people. He's got one tweet out there, the good ... news is in the next tweet. is that at the end of 6 years, after America has been made great again, and I leave the beautiful White House, in parentheses, do you think that people would demand that I stay longer? We'll talk about that in a moment. Keep America great, close parentheses. Now he's doing such a fabulous job. Now he's going to really throw that out there. Now we're starting to talk about a third term. Now we're talking about, you know, this is a, this would be, you know, against the Constitution. This would be more fodder. And they're already talking about that. They were talking about that before he put that on there. But now the president drops that out there to really let the conspiracy people go wild now. And now there's been a whole series of programs that president is not going to leave the White House. And we're going to have to remove him by hook or by crook. He then closes the tweet out, Brooke, and says, both of these horrible papers, horrible, horrible papers, horrible, Brooke, they're horrible papers, will quickly go out of business and be forever gone, exclamation mark. Now, Brooke, here's a president of the United States who takes two major taxpaying organizations that don't like him. He slams them in the tweet, throws them in the book, calls them the enemy of the people, says they're a disgrace to the country. He says he wants a poll to see which one's more disturbed and which one's more, evil. And then he comes back and says, I'm thinking if y'all want me to run for a third term, we can consider that, please. And then these papers are going to be out of business anyways. That was a series of two tweets, Brooke. Now, that made a lot of news. What do you think about that? And I'm wondering, do we ever go back to traditional politics in this country, or has this been a complete game changer forever?
Everything that he does, there has to be a reason behind it. I don't always know what the reason is, but there is a strategic reason. So there's a reason he puts that tweet or any other tweet, you know. He makes them literally insane. And we shouldn't go back to normal politics, because all of the country club Republicans who never wanted to fight back and never wanted to say anything unseemly or untowardly are in large part responsible for where we are. It's the acquiescence and the complacency and the fecklessness of the Republicans that allowed the Democrats to go as far left as they are, which is influencing all of these policies that now Trump has to undo. We can't afford, I mean, it would be great and lovely if we could have civility. We all sit down at the table. We all have our manners and we don't put our elbows on the table and we all eat our vegetables. We are $22 trillion in debt. We have fires all over the world with these, whether it's terrorists, whether it's trade threats from China, Iran, all there's craziness all over the world. And there's a lot of craziness in our country. We have to fight a guerrilla war now in order to even have a chance of saving it.
So it depends what you're looking at for your politics. Again, politainment. I think, you know, on one side, we have a serious talk in this country that, you know, the Republic is in danger. And here's what I find about conservatives, including the people that are on the program today. And we talk out of both sides of our mouth, people. On one side, a lot of you out there say, well, we're really concerned with the Republic. Malcolm, we're really in trouble here. Like the nation's going down. I mean, it's coming fast. There's socialism, communism. I mean, we're in major trouble here, Malcolm. This isn't funny. This isn't games. This is serious business. And then on the other hand, it's, Trump is just being Trump. He's just so funny. We like him in the kitchen, man. We like the way he sets the table. We think he's funny as hell. So how much trouble can the Republic really be in, people, I wonder, since we're all just having a grand old time? And it dawned on me about these self-inflicted wounds, how hysterical the whole conversation is. Again, and I think everybody is just, I think it's everybody's truth at the moment. Everybody's truth. I think we should really think a moment. Are we really in trouble here in the Republic? Are things that concerning? And if so, why is Trump making it more challenging? Isn't he making it more challenging, or do we all need to be entertained? A little bit of food for thought as you set your table, huh?
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple.
Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
It was very entertaining when Obama was in office for a lot of us. We didn't like his brand of politics. I know because I was on radio every day blasting him from sea to shining sea of what I thought about his radical socialist Islamic agenda, you understand. I call it as I see it, people. And I did that steadily against Obama. I was not a fan, did not like his policies, did not like what he was doing to the country, quite frankly. When Trump started to run for office, I was also very critical of him. I didn't fall into the Trump camp as many of you did immediately. I want to see what we got. I wanted to understand it as a conservative. Had you followed Trump's career before then, if you watch some of his earliest speeches in Vegas, he was one of the most colorful entertainers. The deliverables he would give you in a speech, let's just say that they were littered with very unpresidential talk. So when you start to contrast that with a man that was going to become the leader of the free world, I didn't quite think he would be able to make the leap, quite frankly. Back then, I'm saying, in 2016 here, I did not think he'd be able to make the leap that easily, quite frankly. If I'm going to be honest with you, and potentially I may be the only one that's honest in this whole game here, I don't know. But Dennis, that's what I really thought. And now I see it today, and I see how entertained it is and how conservatives think, say, he is a barrel of monkeys. But it's the same conservatives who are telling me we're in trouble. And help me with those two positions, please, and explain to me what we're looking at and where I'm wrong, please.
Well, okay, so let me get practical and tactical, okay? 2016, I wasn't sure about him either until I saw him speak at a function in Los Angeles. And I had seen other candidates speak in the exact same venue, coming in one after another. All of them failed to impress me after about the first 10 minutes of their talking and about a half hour speech. This guy came in and he had the crowd mesmerized for the entire half hour that he was speaking. He can carry a conversation. He can carry a message. He never runs out of material. Now, given that, here's the practical part of this. You're not going to win this election after 2.5 years of the Democratic Party trying to teach everybody that they can get a hold of to hate this guy because he's better than them. What you need to do at this point in order to win the 2020 election is break down the message of the Democratic Party's brainwashing and win these people back. Specifically, you need to win back middle ground Americans of both Republican and Democrat persuasion that are orphaned by the political process that we have now. That is what I believe this guy is up to. And if you don't think that that is a brilliant move, you need to study the mechanics of politics more.
Yeah, no, that is well said. Very well said. Jules, Dennis always has a point, doesn't he?
He does. He really does. And I absolutely agree with him. And I would add, you know, honestly speaking, from where I sit, if I were to try to look at the candidates that they have on the Democratic side, I wouldn't vote for a single one of them, not on policy and not on character. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm looking forward to 2020. I think it's going to be a nice ride, and I think Trump's going to do better than he did in 2016.
And you may be exactly right, because the way things are looking right now, you just don't see. I mean, the best they seem to have right now, if you believe, again, they're, and I laugh when I say this word, people, the polls, it's a joke, then you would realize that that Biden would be the best they think they have at the moment here. But clearly, Biden is not, I don't think he's going to be able to take Trump. Do you, Jules?
Not even close. I mean, he's got creepy Joe Biden. He's got that attached to him now. And then it's not only that. You know, there was talk about his age and about how he would only be able to serve one term. Who's going to vote for somebody that when they think that they can't serve the full amount? I mean, what, we're going to get half of a president? I mean, we're going to have to go through this again in another, you know, I mean, of course we go through it anyway, but starting all over from scratch again, that doesn't feel like stability to me.
Yeah, a lot of people say, too, Bernie Sanders has more momentum, and that they say to watch for him. I have a hard time wrapping my mind around that, Jules, that Bernie Sanders could potentially even be taken seriously, but they seem to be taking him seriously, aren't they?
Well, the news look at who's taking him seriously. We've got, you know, the younger group, and then we've got, of course, the media. But taking Bernie Sanders seriously, I think he really blew it up against Hillary Clinton. I think he had a shot. I think he would have beaten her. I think it was obvious in the direction it was going, and she squashed that. And then when he walked away without putting up a fight, we recognize that he wasn't a fighter, and America needs a fighter. And that's why we elected Trump.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot to that, for sure. He is a fighter. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I don't think this country will ever go back to traditional politics. I'm not sure, because imagine how boring that would be, Brooke. As you just said, you've said several times already, how entertaining he is, how unique you find him. What we're saying here is Trump is a game changer, isn't he?
Yes, and absolutely. And here's the thing I want to say, though. Yes, he's entertaining, and yes, he fights back and everything. But the Republicans in general, there's such a void of cultural engagement. That's what I talk about. That's what I write about on your platform. The Republicans have been totally absent from the culture. Right. They have one thing that they talk about, which is, you know, pro-life. But other than that, there's no engagement in the culture. There's no engagement in the entertainment or any, you know, music, maybe country music a little bit. But there's such a void, and there's such a void of pushback. The most vile, vicious, horrible things that they can say about conservatives, and no one stands up for us. You know, here's the thing. When Trump fights back against the left and against the media, mm-hmm. he's fighting back for me. He's fighting back for you if you voted for him. Where have the Republicans been? You know, I don't even think Trump is a Republican. He's an independent who hijacked the party. Mm-hmm. You know, and I vote Republican, but I'm not a Republican. I mean, if I could get out of the party, I'm so disgusted with Paul Ryan and, you know, a lot of Republicans. But we are in trouble. Just because the guy's entertaining doesn't mean that he's not totally serious with what he's doing. We're being invaded from the southern border, right? I mean, these are very, very serious times for this country. Immigration, no one in the Republican Party was talking about immigration except for amnesty. I mean, Marco Rubio campaigned against amnesty, and two hours after he gets in, he's going for amnesty. The Republican big business people haven't cared about their constituents any more than, you know, the Democrats have really cared about their most loyal constituents, like the, you know, black voters. They don't care about black voters. All of the parties care about power. So you have this guy who comes in from the outside, who's a brawler. He says, oh, you hit me? You hit me? I'm going to hit you twice as hard, yeah. Right? And I'm going to stand up for these people that grind it out every single day in this country that nobody listens to. They vote, 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 vote. And no one listens to them. Okay, the Republican establishment hates him just as much as the Democrats do. That tells me, as a voter, I like this guy because he doesn't sound like a politician. He doesn't look at a script, and I mean, he reads a teleprompter, but he's a businessman. I mean, when he talks about billions, he actually knows what he's talking about. Right. The rest of the people out there, they just talk about billions like they have a clue. Mm-hmm. They're all in government taxpayer-funded, positions, and they have no idea what they're talking about. They just spend money, and they have no idea what they're doing.
Jules, do you agree with Brooke when she says that he's not that he probably isn't a Republican? He's more was an independent that ran. Do you agree with that?
I would say he's common sense, good old common sense. I mean, you know, he makes decisions like she was saying. I mean, you know, on the right thing to do, he can actually visualize, you know, this type of money, whereas most of these people have never seen that kind of money before, and he grew up with it. So I absolutely agree with what she's saying. I agree also with the fact that they are spineless. The Republicans have let us down on more than one occasion. I think they are very jealous of what Trump has done. I mean, they've spent most of their careers trying to work up to this level, and here we have somebody that just came out of left field, and he's president of the United States.
Exactly.
They just can't get over it. So, you know, that's what we have. We have a lot of professional jealousy.
Do you think
here.
It's time, Jules, to rename the GOP the MAGA party, the MAGA party?
I think it already is the MAGA party. I think what? Trump is perfecting it and fine-tuning it.
Should we change the name of the party?
No. He's changing it on his own. I think just leave it alone. I mean, we now associate it with MAGA. Mm-hmm. I think he's taken over the Republican Party. I mm-hmm. don't think that without Trump winning, we would have had a Republican in the White House this time. So I think he's done a great job. Let him keep doing what he's doing.
Dennis, you agree with those statements about Trump and his Republican roots and the rhinos in the Republican Party, and really, Dennis, the lack of conservatism in the Republican Party?
Have felt to be an orphan from the Republican Party ever since the period of the moral majority era. It turned into two parties. Mm-hmm. And it had that cleave, and then following that, you know, now you get the Democratic Party has turned into two parties. I think there's actually a vast majority of orphan Americans out there that are looking for somebody that speaks for them, and a half of them found it in Donald Trump. The mm-hmm. other half are not sure who that is.
Dennis, why don't we create four parties out of the two? Let me talk to you a moment here. Let's talk about, I'm serious, a point I'm making here. Because I really believe the traditional Democrat and traditional Republican parties, and I've talked to you all about this before, I think they're gone. I think they've left the station. They've departed. There are still some core people there, but it's a vast minority now, and they've lost control of the party. Back to what Brooke was saying earlier, the Bill Kristols and all of those cats and the Mitt Romneys. And Dennis, so I'm looking at this now, and I see, you know, these, I'm thinking about four parties. I'm thinking about, very seriously, the Democrat Party, clearly, there are some traditional Democrats left, although they are a minority, those blue dog Democrats do exist. And then you'll have this socialist wing, which has really gotten to be pretty far leftist out there kind of thing. And the Republican Party, we just discovered, is the GOP, you know, the staunchy GOP, again, who never, again, fart at the formal dinners, you know. And then you've got the MAGA movement, who clearly we do fart at the formal dinners, you know. I mean, there's a difference, Dennis. What would you say about all that?
I would say that, okay, I believe there are, in fact, in this country, four political parties. Mm-hmm. I believe that Donald Trump is campaigning to win two of them, neither one of which is on the fringe.
Yeah, and that's the core of America, isn't it, Dennis?
Yes, it is. And I think that's what this guy is mm-hmm. angling to do. That's why he's trying to win back attention from the media under his terms. And I, you know, this guy has a strategy. Don't sell him short. He's not a dummy.
No. I don't think anybody would disagree with you or sell short. Let me ask you all three the simple questions. Just give me a simple answer. 2020, how much does Trump win by? How many percentage points? Dennis?
I think he's going to win it with probably a 5-6% margin.
Wow.
The country's still too divided, and it's going to be close.
That's pretty significant, 5-6. Yeah, that's still significant to me, though. I would expect it closer than that. Jules, what do you say?
I'd say 10%.
Wow, 10% he wins by, you say.
I don't think a lot of the Democrats are going to be excited about their candidates, and I don't think a lot of them are going to show up to vote.
Interesting. Brooke, what's your percentage?
I'm going to have to go with Dennis, 4-6.
Part of the reason we're seeing Trump react and a lot of the things that happen right now is that there is no acknowledgement of President Trump's accomplishments whatsoever across the media cycle. There's no acknowledgements at all. Back to what Brooke was just saying, and as you could hear the tempo of also what Dennis and Jules were thinking, this is a president who has accomplished amazing things in the last two and a half plus years here. Amazing things. For the country. And you're seeing that, the fight that he puts forth all the time. And so when you consider all that, people, and you think about how much the man has accomplished, and you think about how much people don't know out there, it is truly amazing how much ignorance there is. A lot of this is because the media has stifled that. They've tried to hide the accomplishments. They've tried to hide all of the things that he has accomplished. You'll never hear these things on the news. Like you won't hear ABC or CNN or any of these NBC do a special report. Imagine if you heard a special report next week on America's outstanding economy. Wow, let's talk about the last 3 years, people, and how you're just not going to hear that, people. You're just simply not going to hear that, you know. And they're not going to turn on all the things this man has accomplished in office. They want to hide that. So they're hiding that because it comes back to an ideology. And that ideology is also controlled by big money. Big money, it controls big government and big business. So it's big money. Remember, it's all big here that we're talking about here. It's really a game of the haves and the have-nots. It's the people who are controlling this that you don't really hear about, people that are controlling a lot of this stuff. And they're nervous because they can't control Trump. They don't know what to make of a President Trump, clearly. So I look at it this way here. I think President Trump is a fascinating man for unbelievably challenging times. Now, if you're going to take over the political structure of what we have in this country, I think everybody would agree with me when I say America was headed down some perilous roads here. I mean, we were in the ghetto of politics, of corruptness, and where we were over the last 35 years, people. Again, I'm not going to blame it on just the Obama administration, because the Republicans helped make that all happen. They're the ones who helped elect this Marxist, socialist, corrupted Islamic president that we had in the White House. They're the ones who helped with that. Again, it was the Uniparty, the Republicans and the Democrats, clearly, you see. And so all of that said, that's the reason we're in on just unbelievable times right now. And you see, so if you're going to come in and you're going to drain a swamp, how are you going to drain the swamp? Are you going to drain the swamp by putting on your black tie and going to those banquet dinners and acting all pomp and pageantry and, you know, excuse me, would you pass the gray poupon, please? You know, oh, excuse me, I farted. You know, is that how you would do this? Yeah, of course not. You can't. How are you going to win with that? So Trump is interest in medicine. He's medicine for today's disease. I guess that's a way to look at it, people. We have a disease going on here, you see, yeah? And we got to cure the disease. So we need some unusual medicine for the disease. Kind of an interesting way to look at it, isn't it now, huh? America has had a disease. Yeah, we got a disease, all right. And so I think if you look at it in those terms, I think it is entertaining. Now, could President fight the whole system in the swamp if he wasn't doing it this way? I don't know. Possibly not. Because, you know, this is a pretty big game here, people. It's a pretty big game. Trump is having the time of his life, believe me. He's done a lot of things in his life. Can you imagine him waking up in the White House now, what he says to himself? He has got to be laughing his ass off. I mean, he has just got to be just laughing his ass off. I mean, and just having the sport of it and the fun of it, of what he can do to the political elite, is truly amazing. And so for that reason alone, Trump will be the victor, and he will win regardless of their self-inflicted wounds. And so as we started the conversation about self-inflicted wounds, potentially it's not self-inflicted wounds, people. Maybe it's a brilliant strategist that he is, as been pointed out on this show already, and potentially Trump will be the victor in all of this, and it will go down as a brilliant, brilliant strategy, and a way to finally drain the swamp of the corruptness and the deceit out there. That's my message today, friends, and I'm sticking with it. It's time for you to get involved and get loud.